365 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pierre Lafon Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. Welcome, everybody. Several weeks ago, we had a wonderful guest, Nita Davanzo, who is an actress and a director and a coach for kids getting into college. And she was talking about her show that she's directing called Last Train to Nimbrock, which actually is going to open on April 13th at 7:30 and will be repeated on Saturday, April 15th at 3 and at 7:30 at the Center Stage Theater. The New York Times said that this show is a blissful, sweet, romantic play, quite unlike the typical fare offered in theaters these days. So we encourage you to see Nita Davanzo's Dog Star Theater Company show. Today we have a great guest, David Mokel, who is a well-being coach and consultant for Applied Attention Consulting. But before we talk with Dave, we have Brianna Aguilar here today, who is the head of the Financial Literacy Initiative at Montecito Bank and Trust. Good afternoon, Brianna.
Good afternoon.
One of the things about Montecito Bank and Trust is they really are a community partner. They are doing things that have been people are aware of, and some things people are not aware of. And one of the things that you do is this financial literacy initiative, which maybe some people know about, but it's actually pretty big. How many kids are you serving now?
We serve about 3,000 students throughout the year, and we also serve adults. We see about 600 adults a year.
Yeah, so it's a great secret that you've been keeping.
Yes.
And one of the reasons we wanted to have you on today is that this is Teach Children to Save Day is coming up.
Yes.
And I guess Teach Children to Save is a ABA program?
Yeah, the American Bankers Association. It's a national program. This year is the 20th year. And this year, in late April, they encourage, anytime during the month of April, they encourage bankers to go out and teach in schools and reach students across the country.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems facing America is the lack of savings, that people are finding that they just don't have the ability to retire. With Social Security, I think 40% of the Americans who retire, that's all they have, and it's not really enough to keep up their lifestyle. And so one of the things we'll be talking about with Dave is to pattern and to begin to get a habit of something, and savings is a habit. The earlier you can get it, the better. So how do you find teaching? I guess you teach everything from kindergarten right up to high school.
Yes, we do kindergarten through 12th grade and even a little bit of college.
And the program that you are teaching is designed, the curriculum you design, or is it a national program?
We kind of have a hodgepodge of curriculum. We have some curriculum that's provided by the ABA. The FDIC has some. And then we've kind of created some of our own or found different tools and made stuff to figure out the best way to teach our students.
I find what you do is really so important. And, you know, AHA has a program similar to this where we teach, and I say we because I'm the person that teaches them on their afternoon program, financial literacy. And what's really amazing is, first of all, how little they know. Mm-hmm. And how little they retain. Mm-hmm. So when I went in for the second year, knowing what a wonderful job I did the first year, I was absolutely shocked because no one knew what I was talking about.
Yes.
It's very hard to teach financial literacy, particularly when you're talking to a group of people that, you know, in some cases are living hand to mouth. You know, how do you make people realize the benefit of savings when they don't have much?
Right.
Okay, how do you do that?
So one of the things that we really try with the students is to find some way to relate it to their lives right now. And so today I was actually teaching at Adams, and we were talking about saving and the idea of opportunity costs. If I choose to buy one thing, then it's going to impact me in the future. And so I said, well, if you go to a store and you're choosing to buy your paleta or your hot Cheetos, then what's that going to mean for that video game that you're wanting to save for, or those new shoes that you want? And so talking about things that they are trying to get right now, and the idea of how they have to make choices of whether they're going to buy the hot Cheetos that they want in that moment, or those shoes that they've been eyeing, how are they going to save for that? And so those choices that they make, and try to make it relatable, something that they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me.
One of the things I did in my class is to do a very similar thing, where I told them to go home and take everything out of their closet they bought in the last 2 months, put it on their bed and stare at it and say, which one is making me happy?
Yeah.
And that's a way of, you know, looking at opportunity cost in the longer term.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I tried to do in the beginning, I don't know if you've had success, is to teach the power of compounding.
Yes.
Because if you save a little bit and you compound it over 30, 40 years, almost anything you save is going to be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, I think compounding interest is one of the hardest things for them to grasp. And so we'll do things like counting beans or pouring rice and doing things at different rates and just trying to do that. But that's one of the hardest things, especially when savings rates are in a basic savings account are so low. But being able to talk about the power of interest and what that can do. And so the idea, your money is working for you while you're sleeping, while you're going to school, while you're doing all these other things. And so it's definitely can be a challenge.
And one of the things that the bank does, besides provide this program, is to help open up accounts for these kids so that they can actually really do it.
Yes.
Which is really a nice and you know, I wonder, I don't know how long the bank's been doing this, but you've been in business over 40 years. I wonder how many of your clients today who have bundles of money started out in Santa Barbara High learning about it.
Yeah, the financial literacy program has been kind of, I want to say, about 8 or 9 years. So it's a more recent thing that we've been doing. Teach Children to Save Day has been 20 years. I think we've been participating in it for 9 or 10 years. But it's really, the program has expanded as we've seen the demand from teachers who really want to teach the information in their class, but they're not sure how to do it. And so we hope to provide that ability for students to get introduced to the topics.
And one of the things that I find interesting about your resume, which is basically in the education area, is that there was a study about 2 years ago about financial literacy programs across the country. And I forgot which, I think it was University of Michigan did this study, and they found that almost none of the programs worked.
Mm-hmm.
That there was very little retention. And probably because it was taught by people who maybe know finance but don't know teaching techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's wonderful that you have, as your portfolio, a great line of experience in teaching, which would make your, hopefully your program really work.
I hope so. Some of the kids that we work with in the summer, I ask them, why is the bank the safest place to keep your money? And they go, FDIC insurance. So I know that something is sticking. So they know what the FDIC is. So something has been sticking over the years that I've been teaching them.
So this week, we're going to be celebrating, even though it's a little bit early, mm-hmm. Teach Children to Save Day.
Yes.
Although we've moved it up 2 weeks because of our vacation schedule in this community. Do you also deal with other things in this community that are not typically in the line of a bank's business plan?
We've done some cybersecurity stuff, so it kind of relates, but educating customers about what to be aware of, links to be, you know, wary about, what information you're putting out about yourself. I talk, especially with high school students, and, you know, how many of you have a Facebook profile? Do you put your birth year out there, the school you went to, because a lot of those are going to be the security questions that you're answering. So it's not just about how you're portraying yourself professionally, but what information you're putting out there so that people can piece together your identity. So there's that. There's a lot of scams, financial scams that are going around targeting elders in particular. And so we've been doing courses to educate elders as well as their children so that they can be aware of the signs to look for, and really training our tellers on what to look for in case somebody comes in and says, you know, I want to take a $10,000 wire and this is something out of the ordinary. And so that we're really hopefully protecting our customers in multiple ways.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I think Montecito Bank and Trust has been so successful. You're not just a an institution I wouldn't belittle it just giving money. You also give time and expertise. Thank you so much, Brianna, for coming on. And we're going to have you on for the whole hour as soon as we can schedule it.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here today with Dave Moschel, a well-being coach and consultant with a company called Applied Attention Consulting in town. And if you see his TED Talk, you will be dialing quickly Applied Attention Consulting. Before the show, Dave, I told you that I saw the TED Talk you did, and I'm pretty much a cynic, and I found myself doing the interactive work that the audience was doing. It was really very interesting, and I think it's partly because I am OCD, and I think that a lot of what you talk about is relevant to someone who's OCD.
Yeah, and actually, I'll even put forward the theory that to some degree we're all a little bit OCD. We all connect behaviors and outcomes that don't necessarily have anything to do with each other, just the way our brain is wired. Mm. And that can be a real challenge in organizing our lives.
Dave's website has as his mission to increase well-being in the world. And examples he uses are supporting schools and fostering balance, growth, and connection, creating education experiences where people learn how to put their highest aspirations into daily practice, and teaching the fundamental skill of refocusing attention and energy. And he says that he's using techniques and information that have been developed over thousands of years. And you don't look that old.
Well, yeah, so what's interesting to me about the last 25 or 30 years in studying neuroscience is that really what's happening is a lot of wisdom that's been around in enduring traditions for millennia is now being supported by what we're finding out about the way the brain works. And so, for example, for a very long time, it's been taught that we can train our attention. We can strengthen our ability to focus, to aim, to sustain our attention. And we now know from a whole variety of neuroscience research that that's true. So most of us grew up with teachers who told us when we were looking away, they told us to pay attention. That was the instruction that we were given about how to use our attention with no real detail about how we might do that. And so what I'm interested in is helping people understand that attention is a resource and that we can use that resource skillfully. And doing so has huge implications for the way we live our life.
And one of the things you said about TED Talk, which really resonated with me, in your TED Talk speech, which resonated with me, was that the brain will repeat thoughts because you survive that night. The brain thinks that whatever you did the day before is what was the cause of that success. So if you continue to, and the term you use is practice, that thought or that action or that habit, you'll tend to continue to repeat it.
Yeah. Actually, you know, it was really interesting listening to what Brianna had to say earlier about compounding interest. And I think of it as compounding effort. Very small actions that we take repeatedly and consistently over time take our life in, can be very, very large directions, for better or for worse. So if we're practicing things that aren't working on a daily basis, we get more of that in our lives. And if we're practicing things that are working, we get more of that in our lives.
Okay, so let's talk about practice. What is, the, you know, you use a word that I haven't seen in much in the literature, and it's actually a practical word as opposed to, you know, an esoteric word. So what does practice actually mean?
Great. So I use it in two ways, and I sort of think of one as being lowercase p practice, which is simply wherever you put your attention and your energy. So whatever you do repeatedly over time, you're going to get better at. That's just the nature of being human and having a human nervous system. So there's that. There's the generic sense of practice. Just whatever I do, I will get better at. And then there's the capital P, the conscious practice, the things that I've chosen that I really want to have more of in my life. For example, let's take something like gratitude. If I want to have more gratitude in my life, then what would make the most sense is be to practice being grateful in a conscious, consistent, deliberate way. And over time, what I'll find is I'm experiencing gratitude much more of the time. So thinking about it in these two ways, just what we do in an unconscious, automatic way, that's still going to wire our brain. But then there's also the very conscious, intentional practice of the skills that we really want to develop.
Well, how does that work with people? Like, let's take someone who doesn't have any empathy. How do you make them practice empathy when they don't think it's important?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And there's a lot of research, by the way, about ways that we can develop empathy. And it can start, we can break it down to the most fundamental skills, such as, I was just doing this with some students at a school that I work with. We would just show them facial expressions and then ask them to tell us what they think this person is feeling and what evidence they see on the face of the person that tells us that. Some students were very good at it, could do it very quickly, and some students found it quite frustrating and confusing. But over time, as we did this, all of the students became more skilled at being able to read faces. So that's faces, body language, those kinds of things are where we might start. And so we know that we can actually train people to be more empathetic.
One of the biggest problems facing young people today is bullying. Is part of the bullier that they practice it and therefore they continue to, am I using this in too broad a term, meaning that can you practice not bullying? Like, look at restorative justice. Is that sort of, you know, something that you can practice doing?
Yes, and what we know about practice and cultures is that certain practices are encouraged in certain cultures. And so if you've grown up in a family system or in a school system where this kind of thing has been maybe permitted or even encouraged, then that's something you're more likely to engage in and you're more likely to wire your brain toward. And so if you are in a culture or a family that has a practice of finding more peaceful resolution to conflict, then that's what you're going to practice over time. And bullying is actually a really interesting phenomenon in that we used to think that bullying was sourced from low self-esteem. We actually know through the research that actually there's a lot of very high self-esteem bullies out there. And what that means is they've been told over a period of time how wonderful and great they are at every turn. And when they're confronted by someone who challenges that, they don't have the resources to deal with that. And so one of the places they go is to be very self-defensive and in some cases aggressive.
Is there anyone in politics you can think of these days that has that issue?
No one jumps to mind.
Okay.
But I imagine. I imagine there are examples, yeah.
Right. But if anyone in, you know, this show is streamed on the web, so it goes to Washington. So we're going to give you some information on applied attention consulting that maybe could be helpful. The issues here I don't know, is it self-selecting? If I were a parent or a child that was concerned about my child doing something that is not helpful to their well-being, I'm going to seek someone like you out. But what about someone, which would I think be the majority of people, who are clueless? How do you, you know, and again, going back, I'm going to hold you to your statement, but making this well-being better for the whole world, you know, how do you scale this up to people that don't know they need it?
Yeah. So generally people come to me for one of three reasons. One is that there's someone else that they're concerned about. Another is that they're stuck in some place in their life, or they're aware that something isn't working and they're tired of suffering, and so they want out. Or a third is that there's some ambition that they have or some aspiration they have, and they haven't been able to move toward it. So those are the reasons people come to me. However, I also do a fair amount of speaking and going into organizations and working with executive teams and groups of faculty and others. And generally, when we practice paying attention, when we practice identifying what's important in our lives, what really matters to us, and seeing whether our daily output of energy lines up with what we really value, people often come to the realization that they're not. They're spending a lot of time and energy on things that just don't matter to them, or they're putting a lot of time and energy into things that are outside their control. So often after an exposure to thinking about their life differently, they realize that this might be something that would be useful for them.
You know, the business world, I think, has been one of the issues that have helped to bifurcate this society. And, you know, I've talked about this before, but in 1960, the president of General Motors made a speech, and he talked about how important it was for General Motors to find solutions for all their stakeholders. He used the word stakeholders. Now all the MBA books talk about we need to maximize shareholder value as their raison d'etre. And so, you know, do you think that there's a way to talk to business people and to make them more aware of the impact they have on the world, not just their shareholders?
Absolutely. And I believe the bottom line of every endeavor, every human endeavor, is to increase well-being in the world. That's what we're striving to do, and to fold that understanding into our business dealings as well as our educational process, I think, is absolutely critical to the sustainability as a society and as a planet, quite frankly.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers Brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers Brand Showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. We're here with Dave Mokel, well-being coach and consultant at Applied Attention Consulting. But you were not always at Applied Attention Consulting. So where are you from? Are you a native of California?
No, I actually grew up in a very small, tiny little farming town in western New York State in the middle of nowhere. There were 10 cows for every person in our county.
What? So I'm from New York. What town was this?
The town was called Warsaw, New York. It was on the western side of the state, east of Buffalo, south of Rochester.
It really how does it compare to Santa Barbara? I mean, have you ever this longing to go back there and feel, you know, the winter and the snow and the dampness and the lack of people? And
generally, I like being there in the summer. It's beautiful. It's green. It's lush. I really love it. Rolling hills. Really gorgeous. I do not miss the 6 or 7 months of winter, no.
Right. And your education was, where were you educated?
So I went to a small public high school, and then I was off to a small liberal arts school, Williams College in Massachusetts, and then from there, went on to a master's program at a state university, SUNY New Paltz, and that was in humanistic and multicultural education. And one of the most formative educational experiences I had actually was at the mindfulness-based stress reduction clinic through the University of Massachusetts Medical Center. And that was with Jon Kabat-Zinn, who was one of the originators of mindfulness-based stress reduction.
I like the way you said you went to this small school, Williams, which is probably the best liberal law school in the country now. So,
it was a good place to be. Yeah,
yeah, it's a good place to be. Yeah. You know, I like schools where there's not only diploma inflation, but there's school inflation, so that there are schools that I know people have gone to that they couldn't get into today.
I think I fall in that category.
Right.
Yeah.
What got you interested? Well, let me go back. You have not always been a coach. You've been a teacher as well.
Yes. So I spent most of my teaching career, about 25 years, teaching human development and neuroscience and some physics as well to now, high school students primarily.
And this is, I guess, the split between public and private education. I assume based on those subjects, it wasn't in a public school environment.
No, the bulk of my teaching was done in boarding schools, private schools on the East Coast and on the West Coast.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of that? I mean, do you think that that's fair? I don't mean fair in terms of, I went to a prep school, my kids went, so I'm not...
Yeah,
but what about the rest of the? Why should kids learn about gym and woodwork and not about humanism?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I think a lot about that. I think a lot about the privatization of education, and we could spend a whole another hour talking about that. I do feel that no human being should go into debt for education, mm-hmm. and no human being should go into debt for healthcare. Those are my personal feelings. Those mm-hmm. are things that we should be taking care of at the highest possible level for everyone. That mm-hmm. feels to me actually to be the duty of government. That's not the system we have. And so how we make education as equitable for all, I think, is going to be a question for us moving forward.
Is there any empirical evidence to say that if you have that type of elitist education about that talks about humanism, talks about equity, and talks about empathy, that the kids behave better?
It's a great question. Well, it gets back to the idea of practice. So we know that even in really egregious situations, such as, let's say, the Nazi Party in World War II, that there were people, officers in that party who had degrees in ethics. So I often say knowledge is not practice. So, for example, knowing that exercise is good for you does not give you the benefits of exercise. Knowing what understanding ethics does not mean that you will employ those ethics. So I think that the greatest service that an education can do is give you opportunities not just to understand the concepts, but to actually employ them, to put them into practice. And I do think that one of the advantages for many private schools is they tend to have smaller classes. They tend to have a smaller ratio of larger ratio of teachers to students. And so there is more opportunity, I think, to put some of these things into practice. I'm a huge proponent of every student should have an adult who knows and understands them. And I think that that's one of the greatest predictors of resilience and success and happiness later in life.
You mentioned knowledge doesn't purport behavior. And one of the most, and there were a lot of scenes that were chilling in Schindler's List, but one of the scenes that really got to me was the commandant of one of the concentration camps, who was brutal during a scene, went home that night, and he had dinner with his wife and daughter, who was like 10, and he was a fantastic father.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's just so incongruent. Yeah. But that's about knowing and being.
Yeah. And I would say that certainly not to that degree, but all of us have places in our lives where we make things work. Mm. And then we have other places in our lives where it's just not working, and either we're not aware of that or in denial about that. And I think that that's, I used to think of that as the hypocrisy that was baked into our society. I actually think that's just being human. And that I want us to think about living a little more consciously and uncovering those places that aren't working throughout our lifetime.
When I retired, I decided that I would spend my time writing a novel, which is, I guess, typical of a lot of people who retire from the business world. And I decided that what I needed to do was learn how to type. So I took Marvis's typing program, and I went through basically 3-4 weeks of trying to learn how to type. And I basically had it. And then I started writing my book. And because thoughts came to me very quickly, I just couldn't deal. I had to do it with my 2-3 fingers because I could type so much faster with my 2-3 fingers than I could following Marvis. And I wonder how much that has to do with practice with a capital P in this sense, that I was taking the easy way out because I didn't want to take the time to do it. And it was interfering with the comfort of being able to get my ideas out quickly.
Yeah. Well, that's the unglamorous side of practice, right, is that it does take time.
Yeah.
And many people will pay thousands of dollars to go to seminars with the promise of they'll have an epiphany or a breakthrough and their life will be forever different. And it's not as enticing or seductive to explain to people that actually small effort that initially will be somewhat uncomfortable because it's new, but done repeatedly over time will actually create large results. And so we live in a world where it's, take a pill, take the seminar, do this, and things will instantly be changed.
Is there an age limit? Like, if I wanted to, can I lie down and ask this question?
Yeah.
But can you learn and can you practice something at any age?
Yes. And what's really exciting about this, so we used to think that personality was fixed at 2 years old, then 5 years old, then puberty, then 18, and so on, and 25. And now we know really that personality and skills are malleable right up until the point of our death. And one of my favorite research studies was done where octogenarians were given, people 80 and above were given digital cameras and taught how to use Photoshop. And then they tracked them compared to their peers over the next 2 decades. And they found that people who learned this new skill late in life lived considerably longer than people who did not. So not only are we capable of learning things late in life, we actually benefit physiologically and socially from doing that.
Which is interesting because a lot of the new neuroscience, and I went to a seminar about a month ago that talked about that had all these great neuroscientists from around the world who believe that most of the learning takes place in vitro to two. There's a lot of change in terms of what people believe is where it's important. But you're saying that even at an older age, you can actually change habits.
Yes. So we know mostly while we sleep that our brain is continually rewiring itself based on the experience that we had that day. And that may slow down. The rate of change of growth is without a doubt the greatest between 0 and 2 years old. And then again, we have another spurt between about 12 years old and 18 years old during the years of puberty and physical maturation. But we also know that growth continues indefinitely.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and you should stay with us because when we come back, we're going to tell you in a very short period of time how to be happy. Guaranteed. This is AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers. In the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. We're here today with Dave Mokel, well-being coach and consultant at Applied Attention Consulting. So we have something in common.
What is that?
We both had anxiety and stress in our 20s, only I still have it.
Yeah, so do I.
Oh, good. Yeah, so so it doesn't work. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So if I were to define well-being, what I would say is it's a peaceful and powerful relationship with life. That's how I would define well-being. And that can include a peaceful and powerful relationship with things like stress and anxiety. So a lot of research has been done to, we went through a period of time where the goal of stress reduction programs was really to simply to reduce your level of stress. And what we found is that the way people started to think about stress is, oh, therefore stress is the enemy. And in fact, Kelly McGonigal and others have done a lot of research to show that it's actually our relationship to stress that makes the biggest difference. And I would suggest that in my own experience and the experience of many of my clients, it's their relationship to anxiety that makes the biggest difference. So for example, I would say if anyone out there who's struggling with anxiety, a great way to have a panic attack is to work really hard not to be anxious when it shows up. It's a fantastic way to really snowball into something that's out of control. And what we know is that if someone were to come to me and say, I'm feeling anxious, and I were to say, okay, here's how to calm down, actually in the short term, their anxiety rises and their performance goes down. But if the same person were to come and say, I'm feeling anxious, and your response was, well, that's normal. Mm-hmm. That's actually what a human nervous system does, and tell me about it. Mm-hmm. Then actually what starts to happen is their anxiety starts to resolve and their performance starts to go up. So it's about our relationship to what's going on inside us and around us, not necessarily trying to control what's going on inside
and
us.
And one of the things you talk about, things that have been used for the last few years, and one of them is meditation. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things that I identify with, you talk about at your TED Talk, is how hard it is for novices to meditate. You know, you meditate for 12 minutes and you look at your watch and it's been 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that you've done, which I just am astounded, you went to a 10-day silent retreat.
Yeah.
I can't be silent for 10 seconds.
You know, and I have to say that, well, two things. I'd love to pick up on the fact that, I think that there's been an unfortunate disservice that the media has done to to conflate mindfulness and relaxation, that they're one and the same, that if you sit quietly, you will by necessity relax. And for many of us, when we sit quietly, what we notice is that we're tense or anxious or agitated or frustrated or bored or restless. And that's really normal. And the skill of mindfulness is actually to be with that without having to do anything about it and to notice what happens. And in most cases, it passes. When I went to a 10-day silent retreat, it was real. I could talk about this forever.
Yeah, because you had 10 days worth of stuff trapped.
I was with 100 other people, and there was no talking, no reading, no writing, no eye contact. We were either sitting in meditation, we were walking in meditation, we were doing working meditation, or we were sleeping. That was basically it. And, you know, a couple of things that happened there that were really amazing. One is that I realized that I didn't need people around me in order to have all these emotional states triggered. So I went through, fear and anxiety and anger and frustration and bliss, all of that without interacting with other human beings. So that was one thing that was really interesting, to see that the story goes on, whether you have other people triggering it or not. And the second thing was that about on day three, I really thought I was going to lose it. I really thought I needed to leave. And so I went and I talked to the instructor and said, this is what I'm feeling in my body. This is what's going on. And she looked at me very kindly and said, that's fear. And I said, yes, exactly. What are we going to do about it? And she said, I don't understand. I said, well, what are we going to do about my fear? And she said, I don't understand the question. And I want to get rid of it. And she said, oh, no, we're not going to get rid of it. And that was literally it. And I was so angry. I just wanted to punch her. And what happened, what was really wonderful, is what happened is she was right. If I did nothing about it, if I sat with it, it did pass. And that was an incredibly profound learning for me that really shaped the way I think about things now.
And nobody messed up by saying, can you pass the coffee?
No, I didn't. The very first morning, it's funny you say that. The very first morning, I sort of woke up and I was headed into the communal bathroom, and this person was walking toward me, and I looked right at him and said, good morning. And he just looked down at the ground, and I realized, oh, right, that's like the first rule that we were taught, and I've already violated it. So that was the last time I transgressed.
So let's put some meat on the word practice.
Yeah.
Some of the things that you talk about is, we have a choice in every moment. What does that mean?
Yeah. So as I said before, we can pay attention to how things are showing up inside us and around us. And we don't have a choice about what shows up in life. There's very little we can do. It's a complicated universe filled with people who are out of our control. The choice that we do have is what we practice next in response, what we cultivate. And so another way of thinking about it is using whatever shows up to cultivate what we want more of in our lives. So the other day I spilled coffee on my drive into Santa Barbara, and I could feel the urge to blame someone for that, and realized that I also had the choice of simply being grateful that I had a car to drive, that I had coffee, that I lived in Santa Barbara, all these things, and then pulled over and got paper towels and wiped it up. So the choice was there imminently. I could get very, very tense and find someone to blame, or I could cultivate that which I wanted more of in my life.
You say we have a choice, but doesn't that take a sophisticated person to actually act on that? Aren't most people not at that level yet where they do have a choice? Am I just giving excuses that you're trapped in your own history?
So I would just make the distinction between having a choice and being aware of the choices that you have. And so I think myself and others, I lose awareness of the choices that are available to me. My brain sends me a conditioned response, and I react. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that I don't have the choice. It means that I was not aware of the choices that were available to me.
And what about self-image? When I hear self-image in this context, I think of that the senator from Minnesota who used to be on Saturday Night Live, and Franken. He had that skit where he looked in the mirror and said, "You're wonderful."
Right.
Yes. Is that what we're talking about here, or something more sophisticated?
I think something a little more sophisticated. I think there's a difference between trying to convince ourselves of something, an affirmation gone wrong, right? Which is really can very easily turn into just an internal argument. You're great. No, you're not. You're great. No, you're not. Which is really different than the felt experience, for example, of looking in a mirror and looking at the person whose reflection you see and waiting until you really feel a sense of genuine warmth and kindness to the person looking back at you. Mm. It's a great self-compassion practice, which is really different than trying to convince yourself that you are worthy of something. And so, yeah, I think there's always a danger of making this very conceptual and superficial. And that's why when I'm working with people, it's not just an intellectual understanding of the power of awareness. It's actually a felt experience of awareness.
Do people fool themselves? I used to have a mirror over a fireplace hearth in my bedroom, and I kept my glasses on the hearth. And when I got up in the morning, I would go over to the hearth, put my glasses on, and look up, and there was the mirror. And I was frightened. I'm like, God, what do I look like? Look how old I'm getting. And then 2 hours later, you know, after I've done everything, I would, you know, look at myself in the mirror and say, well, it wasn't that bad. It's probably the same image. People fool themselves into bad things as well as good things?
Absolutely. I mean, we can go through a day and we can feel like everything we touch turns to lead. And on another day, we can have similar experiences and feel that everything we touch turns to gold. We absolutely are capable of putting a psychological spin on any event.
Well, I like to just think that this was a great show. Is that?
I will concur in this case.
Okay, you will concur. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and AHA new brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. We're here with Dave Mokel, well-being coach and consultant, Applied Attention Consulting, which provides, and we'll talk about it in a minute, exactly what the services are. But I think if everyone were to go to Applied Attention Consulting, AHA could wrap up its not-for-profit. Everyone would be happy and a good citizen. So you actually have used your philosophy in a very powerful and important period of your life when you were sick. Mm. And it one of the things that happens sometimes, I guess, when there's a real crisis is your whole belief system gets tested. Mm. And in your case, you may want to talk about it, it was solidified.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2 years ago, I think a little over 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia. And I didn't see it coming. It's one of those great things about life, right? I certainly wasn't spending the day before worrying about whether or not I had cancer. And one of the really wonderful things that happened was I ended up, for a variety of reasons, in an isolation room because they were concerned about my own susceptibility to illness and that I could communicate something to someone else. And so I had a lot of time to just sit quietly. And that was wonderful because I had a lot of time to really think about what's most important to me. And one of the things I shared in my TED talk is that I had this bizarre paradox that showed up, which was I really didn't feel a lot of fear about losing my own physical body, about death. I was a little caught off guard by how much I didn't fear that. But I really felt a tremendous amount of emotion around the idea of leaving my two boys without their father. And I know that, you know, there's no way to resolve that. And yet what became so incredibly obvious and clear for me is that the most important thing for me is being the best possible father that I can. And by extension, I think really thinking about the ways in which I am as kind and supportive as I can be in all of my relationships. And so I would say that actually going through the diagnosis and the treatment of cancer was one of the most positive experiences of my life.
And you provide services to both institutions, schools, companies, and also individuals.
Yes.
And so how would someone get in touch with you?
Yeah. So the easiest way to get in touch with me is go to my website at appliedattention.com. People can email me at dave@appliedattention.com. And yes, so I work with, I have the good fortune now of working with individuals and groups all over the world. And sometimes I travel and sometimes that's done electronically. And so coaching generally is a one-on-one, but sometimes I work with couples and relationships. And then I also work with executive teams and administrative teams and groups of adults who would like to build a more positive culture.
And is the length of time required mostly short term, would you say, or is it like analysis where you book your next 15 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. So typically what I ask is, because we're trying to develop a practice, a discipline in someone's life, I typically ask people to sign up for 8 sessions. And those sessions generally start on a weekly basis, and then we start to spread them out over time as people become a little more stable in their practice. And then I have many of my clients who will then call me a few months later, and then a few months later for, you know, either a particular issue that they're working through or just sort of a tune-up.
And so that you would hope that after some reasonable short period of time that people are able to practice by themselves?
Yes. Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, my goal as a coach is really to put myself out of business, is to get people to establish their own practice.
And with companies, those are more group activities, I would imagine.
They generally tend to be group activities, although sometimes that evolves into a coaching relationship, whether it's with a head of school or an executive.
All right. And so one of the lessons of today is you can practice not only being healthier, you can practice being nicer.
Yes.
And I think one of the things you said that did resonate with me, and I don't know, it was just nicer is sort of a, I think it's not as sophisticated as the word you use, but you can actually learn how to be a better citizen by, you know, thinking good things.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully, if nothing else, people will become clients of yours so we can have a better world, which is, I guess, your primary goal.
Yeah. And I would even go so far as to say that it's really, for me, the more we pay attention, the more we see the need for compassion and love and kindness, and the greater we see our own capacity to practice that.
On that note, Dave Mokel, well-being coach and consultant at Applied Attention Consulting. I suggest you get on that website and listen to his TED Talk. It's really fascinating. Thanks again, Dave. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll see you all right back here next week.
It's